about science, to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
You and you too.
And you.
And you. Todd, did you hear there was another a gorilla situation out at the Oregon Zoo this time?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this gorilla was taking its feces, lighting it on fire, and throwing it at tourists.
Wow.
And then they had to be taken to the hospital for turd debris burns.
See, now I'll get to our special guest here.
Turd debris burns.
I'm leaving, so.
We've already got our special guest to leave, and I can see I've been inured to these jokes, so I no longer have emotion, but I see he's crying, so.
I know now why you cry. But it's something I can never do.
Oh, Arnold trying to emote is just fantastic.
Well, welcome to the Mark and Todd cast. I'm Mark Middleton, and with me is Todd Workhoven. And Todd Workhoven, who is with us?
Yes, we have a very special guest, Ryan Zeinert.
Hey, here. Man.
Is that the correct yep. pronunciation?
It's Zeinert, that's right.
Nice. And you are here on business from Madison, Wisconsin, the Portland of the Midwest.
The mini Portland.
It's always so weird to me that Wisconsin and like Michigan are considered Midwest, but how far does the Midwest go over before it becomes Atlantic? Which is our topic today. Geography is totally our topic today. Awesome.
I'm here mainly to talk about topography and mountains.
I was lied to.
I did not know where this city was before I landed here. So
what's the capital of Oregon?
We're all in big. I believe it's Eugene.
It is nice.
It's Salem.
Oh, dang it!
What is your opinion on Upper Michigan? Do you think that does it count? They should cut it out. And shouldn't it just be part of Wisconsin?
It really is confusing, especially since whenever you ask someone from Michigan where they are, they hold up their hand because to them, Michigan is the glove, and then they point to where they are, but nobody outside of Michigan knows what... Like, that happened to me again this week. I was at soccer practice, and Lee's like, I'm going back to Michigan, and I asked her, my sister-in-law's from Michigan, and I'm like, oh, where? And she held up her hand and, like, points, and I was like, all right, well, that's essentially meaningless to me, but all right.
Perfect.
But it doesn't, yeah, that doesn't fit because they have the flappy part on top that should belong to Canada. That's at the top of Lake Michigan, right?
Yeah, I thought Canada was the flappy part of North America.
That's right. Well, they're America's hat. So, but yeah, so you are here, and I did not meet you in person until earlier this afternoon, but I have kind of known you and communicated with you for about, over maybe 10 years, maybe?
Yeah, this is fantastic. I started writing online, at least in my current field, in 2004, and that was about the time once I kind of started getting people reading my page that I didn't know. You and a few other people were kind of part of that first wave of bloggers where we started to link to each other and share ideas and share interests and stuff. So it's been over 10 years.
Yeah, so that's great. So then I found out about you through a friend of my ex-wife. Well, he's a friend of mine too, but she went to college with him, which is why you thought I lived in Arkansas for a while, because that college is in Arkansas.
I think everybody lives in Arkansas.
Yeah, ultimately. Anyone that doesn't live in Wisconsin is Arkansas.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've been and I remember, not that I'm a narcissist or anything, back when I was blogging, I remember the article and the sentence that you really enjoyed was like, now I'm going to start following you. And it was like some article about housework or something like that. About
this is you following me or me
no,
following you?
No, this was you you following me, I think, or starting to read whatever.
Tell me.
It was something about the laundry, because it was how some people will tear the dryer sheets in half and for their loads or whatever to conserve or whatever, and which really irritated me. And I made some joke about the dryer sheet industrial complex.
Yeah, big sheet.
Big sheet, yeah. And I remember you commenting, you're like, that's it. That's hilarious.
It. That's
I was
it.
Like, well, it was finally my dryer sheet joke that won someone over.
I love that stuff. Are you
kidding? But yeah, so we've known each other for that long. And the reason that I was invited you on the show, you had, there's moments in culture that we kind of culturally agree on. even if we don't. Something like, Luke, I'm your father isn't the quote. Like those misheard things.
Played against Sam.
Yeah. All those things that we kind of collectively remember that maybe aren't the right thing. And you kind of started like a modern version of that, a modern kind of urban legend, which is interesting just as in itself, but also in the internet age when things are easily provable. And like you can look up, oh no, it wasn't Mikey likes, I, you know, he doesn't say I like it or whatever. People misquote.
And like, he's still alive.
And he's still alive. Yeah. He did not die by drinking Pop Rocks and
well, as far as we know.
At the same time. Clone. But I mean, so those things are kind of like, it was easy to understand like back then how urban legends could spread before we like had this composite information. But it seems like now it's harder to do in an online situation like that. So I'm going to have you kind of walk through what this situation really out of left field for your life situation is, because it's super interesting. So
yeah, and I should mention, yeah, I've been blogging at thecdp.net since 2004, and I write about all sorts of things. I write personal essays, nostalgic things from my childhood, current events.
And you had a really
list.
When I remember when Lost was on, you had a really popular Lost wrap up.
Right, I would review Lost every week. I always like the balance of personal stuff and pop culture stuff, so it's kind of whatever I'm thinking about at the moment. And, you know, as well as I do, you never can tell what is going to hit,
yeah.
What is going to be popular with people. And
the
it's
thing
not,
that you like love the most and put out there, there's like one like or whatever, and then the stupid thing that you just rattled off in 12 seconds gets 40 likes or views or whatever, and just doesn't ever make any sense.
The dumbest thing. This isn't the dumbest thing, but boy, this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So I guess I should probably just paraphrase the essay that I wrote. And
yeah, yeah.
I wrote this in 2011. This
and
was,
I'll put links up to all of this.
Oh, right on.
So, yeah, you'll be able to
this was,
go to markandtoddcast.com to find the links.
Right on. So it's about time travel, but we have to start at the beginning.
Nice. It begins with intrigue.
What's going to be a callback, exactly. I did not have many talents as a child, but I did learn to read at a very young age. And thanks to the urging of my parents, I remember going to kindergarten already knowing how to read just about anything. And I was reading the newspaper at age 2. I had really, really early reading acumen. And my favorite series at the time, and this would have been in probably the mid to late 80s, were the set of children's books, The Berenstain Bears. And the Berenstain Bears were this nuclear bear family lived in the woods. And there was a collection of them. They were probably 30 pages apiece.
Yeah.
Stan and Jan Berenstain, I think they're a husband and wife. I don't know too much about the history of the book. But
yeah, and they've been around since the 60s, those books, I believe. They've gone back a long way, haven't they? Or did they come in the 80s?
It
seems like the 80s were out, they were already really established, but I guess I didn't.
They were already, yeah, living off that sweet bear money.
We'll have
by
Mark
the 80s.
Look it up.
So each book was its own lesson.
Right.
It was about handling money or stranger danger or
sharing,
caring,
yes.
Staring, all that stuff.
Yeah, because the market, I would say, is like from 4 to 6, maybe.
Parents read the books to their
right.
kids. And it was just a series that I was really into at the time. And I remember also at the time growing up that I didn't sleep a whole lot. So I remember memorizing these Berenstain Bears books, reading them, counting the words, counting the letters, paying attention to, you know, memorizing these things before I went to bed. And it wasn't until about 2010, 2011 that I was just on an internet excursion and I was looking back and noticed that it was not Berenstain Bears, it was Berenstain Bears. It was spelled S-T-A-I-N instead of Steen.
S-T-E-I-N.
S-T-E-I-N.
Right.
Which most people had said, and which I had firmly believed that that's what
right.
it was.
Like my whole, I didn't grow up reading them. We just didn't have them around, but I always knew them as the Berenstain Bears.
I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah.
So my initial thought was, well, it was just incredulousness. I think most people, like you said, the way that information moves in the internet age, we're all corrected on our stuff every day.
Right.
Oh, no, it's actually this. It's actually this other thing. You go, all
well,
right.
Well, actually.
Bad. Actually. Yeah, exactly. Let me put my...
Everything's very mansplained these days, as they say.
Or you, you know, you look it up and that's the end of the conversation.
Right.
For some reason, this really stuck in my craw because of how much I read the books and how much I felt so sure that it was Berenstain. This didn't make any sense to me. So I started workshopping it, and I started asking people. I asked my wife, I asked my friends, and I led the same way. Do you remember that children's book series about those Berenstain? Yeah, Berenstain. And then I would show them a copy of the book, or I would show them a picture online. And it was always met with the opposite of that feeling nowadays when we get corrected on things.
Right.
That isn't right. It was, like you said earlier, getting kicked in the brain. It just felt wrong. There's absolutely no... Everybody, regardless of the way that they feel when they're corrected about things, seemed to have the same kind of visceral reaction to it.
Yeah.
Stein.
Right.
This is how I remember.
Well, it'd be like finding like after all this time, it's New York. And like it's been that way the whole time. I mean, it's that same sort of disconnect where you're like, how could this thing that is the wallpaper to my life be something different than I've known? And it's just jarring and makes you just kind of question.
Exactly.
Question everything.
Exactly. So back to the essay, I said a quick dash to the internet left me baffled. Apparently the Berenstain Bears were always the Berenstain Bears, always written that way, always pronounced that way. For the last 25 years, I had been incorrectly attributing a name to what I thought was a family I thought I knew absolutely everything about. After all the books, all the memorization, all the obsessing, how could I possibly have overlooked the fact that I've been reading and saying their name wrong my entire life? I'm the kind of person, I don't like to, but I correct other people on that stuff. It sticks in my craw when people right. say Victoria's Secrets, things right. like that.
Well, that we were talking about having something to eat before we recorded here, we were talking about the grocery store, the Kroger grocery store, Fred Meyer, and everyone calls it Fred Meyer's, which it's not. It's Fred Meyer, just like Tiffany, just like
right.
all that stuff, how we collectively say the wrong thing. But if you would correct someone on Fred Meyer's, they'd be like, oh yeah, I know, but that, you know, you just say right. it possessively or whatever.
Yeah,
they
shut
would
up.
Like be, yeah, exactly.
Well, goodbye.
I thought I told you to stop talking to me, sir, is what usually you would get.
I got to get back to my goats.
I got to go cuddle with my chickens.
Right. So I was still, even though all of my, everything on the internet said that it had always been Stain, I still felt weird about it. And still, this is 2011.
Okay.
So I went to the children's section of the bookstore, all Berenstain. I traced the lineage of the book series back to 1962, like
oh, there
you
we
said.
Go.
All Berenstain. I even looked at old pictures, you know, of me reading the books, all Berenstain. It was like this cognitive blockade. I was wrong.
Were you able to find a picture of you actually reading one of the books?
There's a picture of me in front of a big screen tube television.
Right.
And it's just kind of off to the side.
Okay. Oh, that's cool, though.
And I had always been wrong about it. And initially, I felt embarrassed because of my egotism surrounding this. Uh-huh. Like, I just can't believe it. I was never wrong about those sorts of things. I'm always the guy that knows the correct stuff.
Right.
So, but more than anything, I was really confused. It was like my childhood changed on me when I wasn't paying attention, right? So, like I said, then something interesting started to happen. I started talking to people about the Berenstain Bears, and I made a point, like I said before, to talk to people that were about my age mm-hmm. growing up, read the book, and initially pronounced it as Berenstain as a way to see if they caught my error off the
right.
bat. Every single person I talked to seemed to be just as baffled as I was. They were all very, very certain that it had always been that. So how does something like this happen? And that is the thing that I was the most intrigued with.
Right.
And when you're that wrong about something you felt so right about,
right.
It does seem that your mind goes somewhere crazy. And I thought it would take off. I thought it was an interesting idea, and I thought it was something that people would want to talk about online. But in 2011, you know what? It kind of fizzled out. There were a few people that talked about it. I saw a few message board posts of people saying things about it, but nobody said anything. And I forgot about it. I stopped talking to people about it. My wife was annoyed. She didn't want to hear it anymore. It was stupid.
She stopped you from talking to people about it, I believe is probably how that went.
She stopped me because I started to posit this theory in my head that drove her crazy. And it is tied into our egotism, and maybe you'll feel the same way. I thought I was right. I'm going to start it there.
Okay.
I was right. It was Berenstain. But at some point between 1986 and 2011, somebody traveled back in time and inadvertently altered the timeline of human history so that the Berenstain Bears somehow became the Berenstain Bears.
It's the only reasonable explanation.
It's the only reasonable explanation. This would explain why everybody remembers the name incorrectly. At some point when we weren't paying attention, somebody went back in time, rippled our life experience ever so slightly. Perhaps other things have changed as well, and we can talk about that later. But yeah, at the time, this is the only thing that we were sure of. So it was like a butterfly effect thing. I think you guys know how the butterfly mm-hmm. effect yep. works. Mm-hmm. Somebody travels back in time. They try very hard to be mindful, not break anything, but they leave a toolbox behind in the year 1410. Because of this, 1400s technology rapidly evolves and advances faster than anything in our history classes. So when time traveler returns to, you know, back to 2011, he finds that the planet is significantly more futuristic than he remembers. This was the only plausible explanation I could possibly surmise.
Right. It's the old Biff leaving the gambling guide back in the 1950s for his smaller self, right, that he found in the future.
The sports almanac.
The sports almanac, yes.
So there was the logical skeptical side of me, which is about 90% of me, went, I got it wrong. I don't know why. I don't know how. But I got it wrong, and everybody around me got it wrong. But nobody seems particularly interested in it.
Right.
So I wrote other stupid things. I blogged for 5 more years. I did other things. And one day in 2015, it took off. The story, the theory, it went viral for some reason. Somebody posted it, and I remember waking up. It was in August of 2015. It was last year. I just have regular websites that I check in the morning. Mm. And my story was on all of them. The AV Club, Nerdist, Vice. It was being talked about in podcasts. Not me, not my page, right, but just the idea of...
Right.
The way that you remember this children's book might alter the, you know, right, timeline of human history and make you think differently. It was in on MTV.com, and it was in 17 magazine.
Wow.
Those are not pages that I check frequently now as an adult. Right. But
I got to get over to MTV.com.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, you know, I always wanted to be in 17 magazine. I thought I'd be in more of a heartthrob role or something.
Yeah, the new issue of Bop.
Yeah,
I was hoping to land the cover of Teen Beat. Yeah, Tiger Beat,
man. So the theory exploded, and it wasn't the theory of why it happened, but it was just that visceral reaction to everybody being wrong.
Right.
And it was not just people that grew up in the 80s and read it as children who may have just gotten it wrong because they were young. Mm-hmm. It was people that are teenagers now, and I think you spoke to some people.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Right on.
But so did you ever figure out who picked up, because if those three sites come out at the same time, is there a connection? Is there an industry connection between? Are they owned by the same company? Or are they like
was
how
just
did
a
they,
post on Reddit?
I was gonna say, yeah, was it slowdownfark.com and somebody picked that?
I think it was a little bit of everything all at once. I saw discussions on Reddit. There was someone who kind of reheated my essay and added some new stuff to it. It started to kind of snowball where people went, well, I don't believe it's a time traveler, but I believe it's this. But we can all agree that something happened.
Right.
Let's start it at this illogical place. And that is where urban legends can just, everybody can just take it and make it their own.
Right. Well, I think it's because, and I was talking to you before we start, my friend Greg, who's over at Fun Employment Radio, probably, what did you say, September 2015?
Yeah, it was August or
like
September.
When he was obsessed with it, and he came up with his own meddling time traveler type idea where somebody goes back and changes this incidental thing for no... But like I said at the beginning of the show, it's interesting because this is not just an urban legend. It's not just a collective mishearing. It's like a lot of these things playing all at once, else it wouldn't exist. Like, it's obviously easily provable that it is the Berenstain Bears.
Right. You'd think.
You'd think
that would be the end of the conversation.
And what we just alluded to, so I was at work today taking care of some kids, and there's two teenagers, a 13-year-old and 15-year-old boys, and I was talking to them about coming and doing this show, and since I didn't read the Berenstain Bears growing up, I had two thoughts. First, and which I don't know if this, I have a vague, because I didn't read them growing up or have them around, like I would obviously see them like in the waiting room, like wherever you go, because they're everywhere, those books, the Berenstain Bears books.
Right. They're in the children's section. They're in the waiting
room. Right. So, I mean, I was aware of them. And now my recollection is I noticed it being Stain and was confused why everyone was saying Steen. But since I didn't know anything about it or didn't really care, it was just kind of the huh or whatever. But now I don't know if that's like a falsely implanted memory after all this. But I could swear that I would always get confused because I would look at the... Because you know, when they would talk about him, I would pick them up and see Stain. But right. I also wonder if... Steen is a very common ending to a very, you know, some common last names, whereas Stain is not. So I think that plays into it too, that our mind is auto-correcting a stain into a Stein, where right. the Stein usually goes.
If you're going most to least plausible theories, and you just start where you know logic would bring you,
right? Time travel.
You would have to start. Well, yeah. I mean,
that's where everything starts, and then you branch off from there.
But the idea is okay. Let's start it where the truth lies. It's Stain. It's always been Stain.
Yeah.
Now we can get cognitive and we can look into ourselves and go, why did I remember it incorrectly? And the first logical thought is Stain is not a common American suffix.
Right.
I think it's Dutch.
It could be.
I don't know. Steen, Goldstein, hear that a lot. It's very logical for not just a kid who's glossing over it or right. memorizing it. To have that feeling, right. to have that thought of, I see it like that, but I'm not going to correct anybody else. Or I just, it just kind of sits. Maybe your brain is trying to do you a favor,
right.
and your brain, you know how yeah. you're, you know how
I'm just going to put this over here in the corner because right. you're yeah. good.
And our brain does that. Like when you you put a sentence that has the word of in it, and you ask people to count the F's,
count the thus.
That drives me crazy. They never do. I remember them doing that to me in high school.
Yeah.
And they would. I think they told us up front.
Right.
There are 7 F's in this sentence, and they would write it on the right. chalkboard or whatever.
Circle
and we on. Would just be pulling our hair out because you, when you read of, your brain hears the V and not right. an F, and it yeah. would just skip over it no matter how many stinking times you look at that chalkboard.
It's right. your brain trying to do you a favor, but really it's creating a blind spot in your head. And that is probably where this comes from. But that is where our hubris and our egotism comes in, and
yeah.
you get so adamant about this is incorrect. There's no way that my mind works that way.
Right.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
course it does.
Well, because you have to face the reality of, and so when I was at work, that's what I was saying. My second thought after wondering yeah. if I made up that memory about it being Berenstain is that I asked the 15-year-old, I said, well, when you were growing up, did you read the Berenstain Bears? And I had read your thing. So I led with that.
Yep.
And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, we're doing this thing where, you know, it turns out it's Berenstain. And he was like, well, you know, I never read the books. I just watched the TV show. And on the TV show, it was Berenstain.
Which is still on in reruns, I believe. I don't know if they're producing new shows, but it's still on television.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And so we listened to the Berenstain Bears opening theme song. I'll play a little bit of it here because we focused on the very first part where they say it the first time. And what we couldn't quite figure out, and like what I think is happening, to speak of conspiracy theories, to me it sounds like the song is actually recorded both ways, but you know they overdub the vocals, so it's a little echoey. So I'm going to play a little bit of it here.
Somewhere deep in Bear Country lives a Berenstain Bear family.
It sounds like both of them at the same time.
It really, really does. Now later in the song they clearly say Berenstain,
yep.
but I could totally see now, even as that 15-year-old, like growing up, you hear the first 5 seconds of a song. Or the opening song of a TV show, you tune it out until it starts because you've heard it 1,000 times. Your brain like goes and gets some milk from the fridge while it doesn't have to.
Maybe the talent of the voice studio lady didn't know that it wasn't
that it was.
It no, was but Steen.
That's who I was going to look like, up because
she read it as Steen as well.
We'll put Stain in the left channel, right. Steen in the right channel, and just see how it plays out.
Right. All right. And because, yeah, it really does. And that's, I found another thing, the Mandela effect that, and we talked about that on the show that one time, yeah. the ba, fa,
yeah.
depending on how, and that's a total example of that. Because
that is the McGurk effect.
The McGurk, yeah. what did I say?
The Mandela effect.
Mm-hmm. Is when you make designs with colored sand.
Blow it away.
The Mandela effect is actually came as a result of this Berenstain thing.
Well, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. So what is that then?
The Mandela effect was a name attributed to this kind of parallel theory regarding the death of Nelson Mandela.
Okay.
When Nelson Mandela died, and I apologize, I can't remember when it was.
Well, also, way to bring down the show.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Let's talk about apartheid.
Yes. No? Okay. That's really why I'm here. But when he passed away, there was a large group of people that said, not only did I think he was dead, but I saw the report on the news. I thought I saw the obituary. I could have swore the guy died 5 years ago. And not in an ignorant way, like I haven't been paying attention to him.
Right.
It was in the way that...
It wasn't forgotten. It was a filled-in memory of him dying.
Right. So there was... The internet got a hold of that, and the Mandela effect became the phrase that we use to describe like a kind of a glitch in the matrix.
Right.
I thought that person had already died. I thought it was this way when it was the other way. So the Berenstain thing falls now, if you look on the internet, under the umbrella of the Mandela effect, which is the theory is we are noticing these little glitches that made us think maybe we were in one universe at one point,
right,
where maybe Mandela died 6 years ago and right. It was Berenstain and Mikey from Life Serial.
Right. It's just...
So there's a website, I think there's now an official domain called the Mandela Effect, and there's a subreddit and all these things where theories like that and like the Berenstain thing are just rattled off in list form, and everybody discusses it the same way we're discussing just this one topic.
Uh-huh.
It's become a thing. None as good as our topic, of course. Right. I mean,
I'm going to interrupt. Is that recording, Mark? Because I don't see any, I don't see a reader. Oh, okay.
Good night, everybody.
That worried me for that. Yeah. Okay, now take two. Let's just do that all over again. What was I going to say? Now I lost my train of thought. But yeah, when I was talking with those teenagers and he remembered, so we spent another 15, 20 minutes discussing it and him being certain that somehow maybe the old version was one way, the new version was a different way since there's been a couple and like it was interesting. It's an interesting thing to see people put their flag in the ground about, because it's completely incidental and meaningless, but our brains for some reason
we take it personally because there is a feeling that says we were stupid,
right,
and we looked at it incorrectly because we were not smart enough to know it. We take it personally because it feels maybe people feel embarrassed,
sure,
that they looked at it that way. The really interesting thing about the conversation you had and younger people remembering it as Stain versus Stain in the animated series versus the book, that seems like a completely different part of the brain.
Right.
Regarding a word on a piece of paper, I can understand why I would look at it incorrectly or why I would read it or remember it. But this is audio and it's visual.
Yeah.
The word is on a screen. It's moving around. You're hearing it.
Yeah.
You're hearing people say it. It's such a different...
Well, and that was the other thing, because we listened to the theme song that wasn't really clear or whatever. And so I kept pulling up clips of the show and kind of fast forwarding around to see if like at some point they're referred to or they're introduced, it was infuriating.
It doesn't have a narrator.
Your name for the first time. Tell them your name. But they never did. They're just Ma and Pa and brother and sister. But
that's what they'd want you to
think.
He's
like, I could swear when they say it in person in the show, that's when they say Berenstain. And so we obviously could not find a clip because I don't think one exists, but it is that. No. I heard it.
Well,
I heard it this way.
That is a fantastic thing about this spreading as a new urban legend in the internet age, because we can, you theorized before, you'd think that it'd be more difficult to spread information, but now it seems easier than ever, because what I'm seeing now is people who want to believe it so badly. And like you said, they're very adamant and they're very frustrated. So they do what I did. They look back at old pictures, they look back at old photographs and stuff, and it's all Stain. But now, because it's 2016, people are photoshopping, and they are if you go online, they're retrofitting images to say Stain, to basically it's like Memento, like they're correcting it in their own brain, and they're going back and going, no, I'm rewriting history as I saw it.
Right. Well, and that's kind of a scary thing to think about too. Is like 100 years in the future, literally, you can make history look like and say anything. You can in a way that you couldn't just misinform people, you can prove it with this picture that you have of, you know, Ronald Reagan pushing down the Berlin Wall personally or whatever.
Whoa, anyway, slow down.
Sorry. Him with a hammer out there.
Sir, it was David Hasselhoff.
David Hasselhoff, yeah. singing on the top.
Let's not go crazy.
But yeah, it in a way, even though all the information is out there, I guess every year we go along, it's easier to fake that information as well. And so to even...
We also live in a time where you can go online and you can just read and absorb the information that confirms your beliefs.
Right.
You don't have to listen to dissenting opinions anymore.
Right.
It can be Steen. That's right. The world you can live in. You can create your own parallel universe. Some dude did not have to go back and leave a wrench in 1986, or there might not be a conspiracy. It's just the theory does not have to go out any further than your own brain, but
right.
People don't want to think about it that way.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, it proves again, I mean, everyone still likes to think that eyewitness reports are completely reliable and that's been proven for decades that those are kind of worthless. And so I think that's in it. 'Cause it's easy to say like, well, of course, you know, those people won't get it right or that kind of, but then you're faced
I would remember.
I would remember. Well, it's like that Monday morning quarterback, and like every time there's a tragedy, well, I would have been the one up there to tackle the gunman or whatever.
Yep.
You know, it's that same. It's
here's
that
how
same
it should
thing.
Have been done.
Right. And here's how I would have done it.
Well, and just like that, that's where your emotions come into play. It becomes more than just a word in a children's book. It
right.
becomes how many other things have I gotten wrong? How many other things are kicking around in my brain that I was completely incorrect
right.
about? Now, there are things logically that were done. People went back, they looked at the photos. They also thought, well, hold on, maybe it was Steen and maybe it was proprietary and they sold the company.
Right.
Maybe literally the trademark changed. Like there are tangible theories that you can start with.
Right.
But if you exhaust all of them and you are still not satisfied, then you have to start to abandon logic. And
right.
that's where things become really fun. And that is where your base disappears and you see dissenting camps
yeah.
on the internet. That is my favorite part of this. I've obviously gotten nothing from it. Popularity. A lot of people don't even know that.
Right.
I certainly wasn't the first person to have the idea, but I
right.
kind of wrote it a while ago and it kind of snowballed and I was just part of it. I'm just happy to be part of it. But
right.
I just want a
shirt that says Team Stain on it. Team Stain and Team Stain.
That's what I was getting at.
Okay.
There are now, if you go online, if you scroll through Twitter, you can see that. And what it is now is it's spelled out BERENST, and then there's a hashtag where the A or the E should be. There are teams. There are people that argue. There are T-shirts. Somebody is fiscally... There's an Air Bud Studios for this on a much smaller scale where there are selling shirts. I saw a Kickstarter for someone who was going to make a documentary. I'm like, about what? About what? You're just going to sit people down and have them go, well, remember
oh,
it wrong.
Yeah. That's crazy. Here's the book.
It's pretty incredible. Now, we can talk cognitive stuff, the English language and stuff.
Right.
But I think the real reason why this has legs is because we can skip over all that and we can talk about parallel universes
right.
and we can talk about conspiracies. Surely somebody's doing this to screw with me.
Right. That's the American way. Not what is happening. Why is it happening to me?
Who says I have to change the way I think about something?
I don't have to.
Well, because it's wrong? Get out of here.
Right. Right. No, but I mean, that is kind of a crazy microcosm that people, I mean, there's that emotional thing like that you said that we have to, we can't let go of that, because to let go of that one thing means you have to let go of a lot of the things that you've always known since you were a kid. I mean, whether that's something you misheard about dinosaurs or Berenstain Bears or like.
Right. Somebody told me a while ago, everybody would readily admit to having bad handwriting. Oh, my handwriting's terrible.
Uh-huh.
But if someone told you that you were a bad driver, you feel different about it.
Right.
You'd feel
because
defensive.
I am not.
I am safe.
I proved it through my insurance company.
Pride, safety, your intelligence, the way that people look at you and respect uh-huh. you. There's something more intangible on the line. And I think that's what this taps into a little bit.
Huh.
Because it's also tied into, I had this personal childhood nostalgia. It was such a big part of my childhood. It was a positive memory. It was this snapshot that I thought was preserved perfectly in my brain, just like all these other scrapbook memories.
Yeah.
And if this is patently proven incorrect, it is a really terrifying proposition.
And easily, not like a, oh, I didn't know they were a, like,
right.
I don't know where it's going with that, but like
you meet up with,
like,
a,
you got something wrong in their backstory or like something right. outside of the Berenstain Bears canon.
Right.
That was like in one of the novel, you know, offshoot novel, the Rogue One of the Berenstain Bears OVRA.
It's not part of the canon. Right. But like when you meet up with an old friend and something happened at a party and you remember it one way, and then as an adult you meet up with someone else and they go, "No, no, no. This is what I saw."
Yeah.
And your whole, first of all, does your memory of that night change? Usually not.
Right.
Which is a whole other crazy thing.
Yeah.
But this is not a memory in the emotional sense.
Right.
But it seems like it crosses over into that side of our brain where we take it personally.
Right. God, that's so fascinating.
So, time travel.
So time travel.
So time travel.
Right. Well, it reminds me, and I think I talked about this on the show before, that old, the old episode of the new Twilight Zone that was out in the 80s with the blue people in between minutes that are supposed to put all the stuff back or whatever. That seems like a, have you ever heard that? So like I forget the conceit of the rest of the episode, but it was that like someone lost their car keys or whatever. And it turns out that in between the minutes, there's these blue people that set this computer here and made sure that everything was where it's supposed to be. And like, they forgot to put the keys there. And that's why 10 minutes later, when you look back on that same spot, oh, the keys are there again. How did that happen?
Right.
And I don't know why that stuck with me as a kid, because the new Twilight Zone was not a very good show, nor did we watch it a whole lot, but
it wasn't, but I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Have either of you watched that, BBC series, not BBC series, that British series, Black Mirror?
Yes. Yeah. The,
Charlie Brooker. It has done it.
Pig episode was
right. It's as someone who really loved and appreciated the Twilight Zone, I think it's one of the greatest examples of sci-fi and television ever. Rod Serling was very prolific. This is the closest, most logical predecessor to the Twilight Zone I think I've ever seen on television, which is saying much. It was a British show, which means that they've aired 7 episodes in 6 years. Right. And it's 3 seasons.
And it's 12 seasons. Yeah.
However, they are now in discussions and they signed a deal with Netflix. So October 21st, 6 episodes are going to drop at once.
Wow.
And it's the first half of a 12 episode series.
Oh, that's great.
Is it one story or is it
each
episode is a different one, like the Twilight Zone?
Each episode stands alone and it focuses on a certain aspect of maybe like a not too distant future kind of thing.
Right.
Technology that could probably, we can look at, may exist a few years from now, and it's positive and negative and usually very terrifying effects. It's really outstanding.
Huh.
I was just, I said I was here for a conference. Mm-hmm.
That was a lie.
Yeah. No.
Surprise, I'm robbing you.
Yeah, I'm a blue person.
This is why you don't meet people off the internet.
And you're stabbed. My day job is in testing and examinations, and a lot of background of that is cheating, legal defensibility, things like that, and how testing has to evolve with technology and the way that people cheat to become a architect or an accountant or something like this. And I had a real Black Mirror moment a couple days ago because someone was doing a slideshow and they showed me a device that has been patented by Sony. I think it was April 2016. And it is of basically a Bluetooth contact lens. It is a contact lens with a Bluetooth device in it. And the reason that they created it, they said, was, well, it's going to be for diabetics, and it's going to measure glucose readings through your tears, and it'll sync up
your sweet, sweet tears.
Sweet, delicious tears.
Your regular tears.
However, it also has things about how it knows the difference between a involuntary blink and a blink to snap a photograph, to snap audio, to record things the same way that maybe Google Glass did. So I'm looking at it, and the reason they showed it to us was in a test cheats of the future kind of way, but all I could see was, and there's an entire episode of Black Mirror that exists in a future where everybody has these implants in their head and they can record every single moment of their life, and they don't have to recall past memories incorrectly. Right. They can you could just project it up on the screen.
Right.
And how in the show it erodes a marriage, basically.
Okay.
But it kind of talks about, you initially think in the short term this is a great idea, but in the long term, I don't think any of this stuff makes us happy. And right. I think that is the ultimate idea of Black Mirror. And I don't know, maybe we'll get a Mandela effect.
Well, I mean, and all of that, I think I said this last time we recorded too, that as much as I'd like to see what the future has, because it's so fascinating, that kind of stuff and all those ethical things that were, it's going to be a bumpy road with a lot of that stuff for a long time before it gets ironed out. And
especially because technology is evolving faster than we can evolve. And right. I think that's, yeah. sometimes I think that's why we feel uncomfortable about things. I think in the short term, we're ready to adapt and change. And we all sure. at least like to believe that we want to embrace this new technology and how much mm-hmm. it helps. But sometimes I think it bums us out and we don't know why.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why.
I think so. Well, and not just, now I lost my train of thought.
Well, also in 2016, we're dealing with curbs that are 2 inches high. You're right, how are future generations going to have actual debates about these Bluetooth things when we can't have a civilized conversation about using public restrooms?
Right.
And, you know, I mean, this is right. something that we
it's a little bit bigger in scope than that. Well, and that, I think that's what I was going to say with, didn't have it. Twice in a row.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. Good.
No, it's
welcome to the Mark and Todd guest.
Right.
Leave it in.
It was just future ethics. I think there was something about that.
And we should be the deciders.
Right. I should be the sole arbiter of. Well, no, I'm not just. It's hard. I think a lot of this technology is hard for us to understand and cope with, just personally and mentally, but like. Just physically with our laws, it's going to be even harder to keep up with, because first we have the ethical issues that we all wrestle with, then we have to figure out how that goes into a fair law, and that's a long train. Like,
what
and,
moves and
technology
slower.
Happens fast, and so we're busy having the discussion about the last technology that barely exists anymore, and they're making Boston Dynamic robots that can wander around and kill people. I mean, we're doing it, and we're gonna
and
have
you can't
to keep
kick
up.
Them over.
Right. We'll no matter try. How time you knock that box out of their hands, they're always going to pick it up.
And what moves slower than legislation and law and government?
Right.
And when these things happen faster than you can, it is exciting. I totally understand where you're coming from. Part of you wants to live to be 300 years old.
Yeah.
Because we really in the internet age hit the ground running as far as technology yeah. goes. But there is another part of me that goes, I think I have about two or three more innovations that I'm going to follow through on, and then I think I'm done.
Right.
And then I think I'm going to die.
Well, we were talking yeah. at dinner about like how I barely use my cell phone the way most people do, because I got a smartphone really, really late in the game. So I wasn't used to using apps anyway. And so all I use is like text messaging and the phone.
Congratulations.
Exactly.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
I play a lot of Minesweeper.
See, yeah, and like, mine, and yeah. so it, to me, like, that's where we were talking. I don't use the cloud. I don't really use Spotify because I'm not a music. Like, so already, I can say, and I'm almost 10 years older than you. Mark's older than both of us.
Yes, I am.
But I can already see like where I've gotten off the train and being like,
you can feel
it. Yeah, and I'll stay near the train and I'll still do, you know, pick some stuff off as it passes. But you can feel yourself being, all right, this is the point where I become my grandfather.
And it's,
but it's nice because I mean, my parents are now, I think both of them are 69, 7 years old. 69, I know, because they'll listen to this and get angry that I didn't know. But I mean, they're still using, I mean, they use their cell phones as much as I do and text, like, so they're able to. So like, that gives me hope that like, I'll still be able to do most things and I'll still want to, but there is that, like you said, there's that disconnect of like, I'm not going to try to be on the cutting edge anymore. I'm not going to try to keep up with all these things that are happening. I'm fine where I am. So if like, there's technology that lands around me and I get to pick it up and play with it, then that's fine. But
think about how you 15 years ago would have felt if you now came back and said that. You go, no way, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna have my finger on the pulse forever.
Yeah.
But you must reach a certain saturation point where you go, well, that was old person talk. I can do most things. Okay, Grandpa.
I only need this reaching stick for the top shelf. But no, there and it
you
is.
You get that free with your glucose meter and your pet meds delivered to your door.
I think it starts happening in your mid-30s. So you get to look forward to this. In your mid-30s, when you kind of see the actors and singers and popular people that you grew up with kind of phasing out as this new generation is kind of... And right now, the new generation hasn't really taken over. There's still kind of like kiddie, teeny bopper things. But like suddenly, Miley Cyrus is no longer a teen thing. She's an adult thing. And like...
And Winona's a mom.
Playing the mom. Mm. Yeah. Which, what did I say? There's a sequel. What did I just see? Something 2 with Winona Ryder. What old movie was Winona Ryder in? Reality Bites 2. It was not that.
Lost Boys?
No. It was something though. Beetlejuice.
Oh, exactly.
Now you need to see it and summon him. But yeah, Beetlejuice 2, which I thought was really strange. Yep. Anyway.
Who will play Beetlejuice?
Ooh, I don't know.
No, Johnny Depp.
No, it was still...
Was it still Michael Keaton?
Keaton, yeah.
I guess he's not doing anything.
Yeah, and you just, I mean, put Beetlejuice makeup on him.
He always looked old or whatever.
Right.
That's another one I need to watch with the kids to see if it holds up, speaking of. His Beetlejuice.
Watched it not too long ago.
Is it very good stuff?
Nice. I mean, it's got Kathleen O'Hara.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
I love her.
Alec Baldwin.
I love her. Oh, yeah. That's right.
A young Alec Baldwin.
That's right.
Was it Gina Davis?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
She's an Olympic archer, archer now, Gina Davis, and she's in Mensa. She's like super freaky smart, and she can really shoot a bow and arrow and super tall. Yes. I could just talk about this kind of stuff forever because it really is that melding of memory and history and emotion and culture and doing something as a culture like that.
Ego.
Yeah. Right. And
each bullet point could be its own thing. And I really think that's why it took off the way it did, because I think the root of an urban legend is it can just kind of mean anything to anybody.
Right.
And much like us remembering it incorrectly, you can kind of turn it into whatever you want to, and like a game of telephone, just move on with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so what an interesting thing to kind of stumble upon and kind of be at the root at.
Well, yeah, really, and as a writer, like you said, you know, you can't really ever predict what's gonna be out there forever.
Right.
It's like, oh, this is.
And that's always the weird part too. Like to me as a writer, if I'm working on like even a tagline for a company or something like that, and you see the final product, and like in New York, like, you see this thing take off, and you remember, I was just in the shower and it came to me. Like it wasn't a big deal at the time when I wrote it.
Right.
And it becomes the company motto. It becomes these big things, but it's like, I was just standing in the kitchen in my underwear. You know, I didn't put that much thought into this. It just kind of happened. And it's just, it is weird as a creative person to kind of give away what you do and have people take the ball and run with it or leave it sitting there or whatever that they decide to do with it.
That is an interesting thing. Your work goes around the earth and you just let it go.
Yeah.
And years later, you just kind of meet up with it and you kind of see it in passing.
Yeah.
And this is on an extremely low level. I can't even imagine how the sense of identity loss that you have when you're the kind of person that does, when you are a huge star and you send it out. I feel empathy on the smallest, most
it's level. Weird.
Yeah, it is very
interesting. And that, I mean, and your name wasn't necessarily attached to it in the way that like it became your personal life, but even no, but I mean,
well, I remember reading your article.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that going out and like me googling like where the source, if you will.
Right,
yeah,
because you didn't believe it.
Yeah, and so I remember reading your article about it and the
that's so trippy.
Well, another interesting thing that happens when you put out a theory like this, and a lot of other people got it worse than I did, but you get feedback from people. And
can't imagine.
Some of my favorite emails, hey, man, I just, you know, I really, really was inspired by the essay. I started this YouTube channel, and it's, you know, Lizard Person YouTube channel.
Right.
Massive conspiracy. Like, hey, man, I was just joking. Or, you know, I started this Facebook group devoted to it. And you go there and you're like, man, I wouldn't even show my wife this page. This is
crazy.
Insanity.
Yeah.
It is really interesting because that's what happened. happens.
Right.
It's gone. It doesn't belong to you anymore.
Right. Well, I'm long time ago when I was in Newsweek, back when that was still printed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's another thing that goes around. And that was a weird feeling because, like, you know, famous people read Newsweek. And I was like, right. I wonder how many famous people are sitting on the toilet reading something I wrote, which was a really trippy thing. But I get, and this
he's
is
a president.
Of, I know.
Speaking of Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Well, and then, so I got a bunch of letters for that. That was still internet age because it was still like 2002 or something like that.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of like in the mail from crazy people. And this guy in Hawaii, just it was all peace, love, and harmony, except for how he wanted to like kill me and any family I might have ever. It's just like you see like the actual, the other side of humanity, right, that you're kind of shielded against in most normal situations until... I was young back then, so of course I wouldn't let that opportunity. I mean, my own hate mail, and so I was just going back and forth, and it was crazy.
Yeah, hate mail.
Anyway, hate mail is pretty satisfying sometimes.
On the very rare occasion that it shows, I typically write personal essays, so to get hate mail would be very... I hate you specifically, but I'm not going to stop reading.
Love, Celia.
Your story. Yeah. Honey, I know it's you.
That's awesome. Well, I have a couple quick news stories at the end here that I'll wrap up with. But yeah, this everything about this is just fascinating, and I could just talk about it forever.
I encourage people to do what I did and what I... always
do
like
research.
Doing, which is stay up late and go into a rabbit hole and freak yourself out and read all the crazy things people have to say about it. And
especially conspiracy. I mean,
I hear
I
the
love...
earth is flat.
Oh, lose yourself in the conspiracy.
Yes. That long ago, I would fall into the 9/11 conspiracy threads hard. The ones that were on FARC would just go on endlessly. And I was just so fascinated by those. And I would just read everything about them. And
I like the phantom time theory.
Ooh, what's that?
The idea that there is a stretch of our history during the Dark Ages, like, I don't know, 400 to 800. Basically, there's 400 years of history that never happened. The records are very spotty, and the theory is because they never existed. It's actually the year 1616 right now, and we're 400 years behind. It was just some sort of clerical error back in the Dark Ages, and the reason we don't have a lot of information was because it never happened.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that are very adamant about that.
Oh, that's kind of weird.
It is, and it's fun. You probably enjoy it the same way that I do, is on a psychological level, because this is a fun theory, but I want to know who writes something like this.
Yeah.
I want to know how this permeates into the psyche of a human being. That's very interesting.
Find yourself a conspiracy theory today.
Fall in love with it.
Fall in love with it and then become crazy.
Yes.
All right, so quickly here. Sorry, Tesla. You can't issue yourself a dealer's license. A state court has ruled that Tesla cannot issue itself a franchise to sell vehicles directly to its consumers in Missouri, a blow to the electric car maker that wanted to start selling its cars. In a suit brought by the Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, a judge ruled that car makers cannot issue themselves franchises, which means Tesla will have to stick to selling their vehicles online in Missouri. The dealer suits said the state broke the law when they issued themselves license, blah, blah, blah. Arizona, Connecticut, Michigan, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia also bar Tesla from direct sales because under the law, car makers are not allowed to directly compete with car dealerships that sell their vehicles.
We had that in Wisconsin, too.
Okay.
I heard that from a dealer.
Are they clearly on the wrong side of history?
Honestly. Like, I mean, come on.
Are there a lot of Teslas here in Portland?
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
We have one in the neighborhood.
Oh, really?
And where I live.
Yeah. No, I work over in West Lynn, which is kind of a ritzier area of town. So I see quite a few of them. All right. I'm going to skip. A woman is suing her parents for posting embarrassing child photos to Facebook. So we'll end with this one here. A notorious runaway robot that has escaped the lab twice has been arrested by the police.
A little robot cuffs. Adorable.
A notorious runaway robot that has escaped the lab twice. Promobot was supporting the Russian parliament candidate Valery Kolechev in Moscow. I'm sure that's how it's pronounced. Kolechev. In Moscow, when authorities attempted to handcuff it and take it away. And there's a little video that I came with it, which is just hilarious because it looks like, what's that little robot they had in the 80s, and then Toyota makes it. Is that Asimo?
Oh,
is that what that's
Asimo.
Called?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It kind of looks like that with its E.T. kind of looking head and body. And it's just standing there like on this public street, and it's just kind of slowly looking at the crowd and then slowly looking at the police. And you could tell it's like, what's happening to me? Why is this happening? It's so innocent. And so it is believed that the arrest occurred after a member of the public called police as the robots were recording their opinions on various topics. Police asked to remove the robot away from the crowded area and even tried to handcuff him. According to eyewitnesses, the robot did not put up any resistance. The robot hit headlines in the past when it escaped from its lab and walked into oncoming traffic twice, and it caused chaos on the streets after getting halfway across the road before its batteries ran out, leaving it stranded in the middle of the carriageway. The robot was on the road outside the research lab for more than an hour as vehicles tried to maneuver their way around it. Promobot, short for promotional robot, as everyone could see coming, is a unique robot created by Russian scientists. Which, I'm sorry.
Well, it is unique.
The phrase, yes. Yeah. And the phrase Russian scientists, I don't know, always makes me giggle a little bit for some reason. It's designed to work in customer relations. It is designed to interact with humans realistically and can answer questions and remember every person it has ever met.
It sounds like a drunk.
It
forgets where it is. It has spells. Spouts its opinions that you did not ask for.
It wanders halfway across the street before passing out and having traffic go around it for an hour.
It probably, you know, if you pepper spray it, it's going to just go right through it.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah, I'll post a picture of that robot, too, because it the video was pretty funny for that. But
there are videos online of just compilations of Asimo falling over at conventions.
Yeah.
Oh,
he still performs at Disneyland.
Does he? What does he do now?
At the round table, so that the building that does the spin around, they've got a level where they have
World of Tomorrow.
The World of Tomorrow, yeah. And up until at least a couple of years ago, there was Asimo. Like,
did
he can go upstairs? Like,
he hands out brochures at the information booth.
Yeah. Thank you. Did he ever speak? Did he have the speak and spell voice, or am I just putting that in, inserting that?
Speaking of memories,
probably. That don't exist.
I don't believe there was any voice coming
in my universe. Asimo had a voice. Yeah.
All right.
Something
well,
happened.
Should we listen to the Berenstain Bears full theme song, or do we want to listen to the whale being exploded? Because another story I pulled, it's mostly just there's anyone who knows the Pacific Northwest or even has been around. There's in 1970, a big whale washed up on the beach and they blew it up with dynamite. And so there's this famous news footage from Channel 2 here in Portland.
The best part of that recording is right after things start hitting the blubber starts hitting people, and you can hear people like getting hit.
Yeah, well, first you can hear this old lady, I forget the man's name, but you hear this old lady say, "Now Ralph, you can take your fingers out of your ears," and then like everything starts descending into chaos. But they've kind of cleaned up the video to that, which I'll also post on the site. And if you have not seen the exploding whale video,
it's amazing.
Genius. So they blow up the whale. We'll listen to that. And what happens if you haven't seen it? You'll hear the explosion. Everyone cheers. It gets a little quieter, and you'll hear giant wet thuds. And that is giant pieces of whale blubber and meat just
like
raining
fermented.
Down.
Fermented. It has been there for a long time.
It's rotting on the beach.
It is rotten meat.
And it destroyed what you noted earlier, a car from the 70s, which was probably made of nothing but iron and steel, and it just crushed it.
A car that could no longer fit in our garage.
Right.
A massive American car. And those pieces were as big as those cars.
Yeah. So it's worth looking up or watching if you haven't watched it, but we will see you guys next time. And thank you, Ryan, for coming to visit our little show.
Thanks so much, guys.
Great having you on.
So yeah, if anyone else wants to come all the way from a different state to bring me free things and be in our podcast, you may do that. So just get ready.
Look us up on our Facebook, facebook.com/markanddodcast.
Book your appointment now to bring us free stuff. All right. We will see you guys next time. So I awkwardly try to figure out here. So they're the entrance to this. I'm sorry, I keep talking. But they're talking to the guy who, like, I think it was his idea, and he just planted the dynamite. And so the reporter is going to be asking this man if anything bad will be happening. So we'll see you guys next time.
Ready? We asked George Thornton, the highway engineer in charge of the project, for his final observation.
Well, I'm confident that it'll work. The only thing is, we're not sure just exactly how much explosives it'll take to disintegrate this thing so the scavengers, seagulls, and crabs and whatnot can clean it up.
whatnot.
Is there any chance it might be more than a one-day job?
If there's any large chunks left, and we may have to do some other cleanup, possibly set another charge.
Dynamite was buried primarily on the leeward side of the big mammal, so as most of the remains would be blown toward the sea. About 75 bystanders, most of them residents,
too,
who had first found the whale to be an object of curiosity before they tired of its smell, were moved back a quarter of a mile away. The sand dunes there were covered with spectators and land lubber newsmen, shortly to become land blubber newsmen, with a blasted blubber
so
beyond all believable bounds.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Okay,
here it comes. We have a countdown here. Six, five, four, three, two.
All right, Fred, you can take your hands out of your ears. Here comes pieces of...
Listen to that.
Our cameras stopped rolling immediately after the blast. The humor of the entire situation suddenly gave way to a run for survival as huge chunks of whale blubber fell everywhere. Pieces of meat passed high over our heads while others were falling at our feet. The dunes were rapidly evacuated as spectators escaped both the falling debris and the overwhelming smell. A parked car over a quarter of a mile from the blast site was the target of one large chunk, the passenger compartment literally smashed. Fortunately, no human was hit as badly as the car. However, everyone on the scene was covered with small particles of dead whale.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. All right, see you next time.